So we were during the break there. Welcome back, everybody. The Rob Brown Show's on the radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Great to have you, Rob Brown. My man Ben filling in for the great Milan. So we were in the break there, and Ben said, "So what'd you get the lady for Christmas?" And I told Ben, I said, I got to tell you, I'm pretty happy with my gift. I think I have exceptional taste in gift giving. To the one who has earned my romantic affection for the remainder of our natural born days.
What'd you get her, Rob?
Oh, I'm going to tell you, buddy. I'm going to tell you. I said, hang on. I'll tell you during the, tell you when we get on the air, because I think what I've done here, is going to make the ladies of the Rob Brown Show Armada go, Rob Brown is one smooth son of, And the fellas out there are going to be like, God bless this man. He understands. He's making the fellas of the upstate look bad. Here's what I did, Benjamin. She and I got married last year. Officially, formally, and legally. She's trapped. She can't go anywhere.
Congrats.
So what we said was no big gifts this year. All right. We spent a lot of money because, you know, we wanted to have a wedding, especially since we were doing it down in Florida and we were asking the people that we wanted to be there to drive a very long way to get there. We wanted to throw a wedding, and not even really a wedding. We wanted to throw a wedding reception that would be described by the kids as a banger. Oh, and it was a banger. My dear friend Chris left. He said, "Bang, my dude, wedding of the decade." I feel like we nailed it. All right, party was out of this world. So we spent a lot of good money throwing a one night, one time only party to celebrate. And we said, "Hey, when we get to Christmas this year, no big gifts for Christmas. We'll just do little stuff, right? We'll do little stuff. We'll do some maybe like a shirt, maybe some candy, like little stuff. Keep it light." For Christmas. Yeah, I thought it was. You know, we both thought it was. We thought, yeah, it's good. You know, maybe keep it to a minimum. So I said, you know what? I'm going to honor my agreement with my wife. We're going to do it low key. We're going to do small gifts only. Just little stuff. Just stuff that says, I was thinking about you, but I was also thinking, we're broke. So, like, let's not spend a bunch of money. And so I came up with the single most brilliant idea I may have ever come up with as a gift. Okay, this maybe even topped that's Christmas 2 years ago before we got engaged. What I did for that year, Ben, just to kind of tell you like the mindset of the Rob Brown gift giving experience. For that, seeing as that year, she's a big fan of the opera fan, so am I. That's like one of the things we talked about when we first got together was we both love the Phantom of the Opera, and Phantom of the Opera was leaving Broadway. Oh, nice. And so for a Christmas gift 2 years ago, before we got engaged, I gave her two tickets to take her to New York City to go see the Phantom of the Opera before it left Broadway. Nice. And to announce that to her, I got her a cameo from Ben Crawford, the guy, the actor who was playing the Phantom on Broadway, surprising her with two tickets to come see the show, right? I'm real good at this. Wow. I'm real good at this.
Wow.
So I thought, all right, what can I do? We're now married. It's official. Like, I don't have to romance anymore. The romance is over, right? It's practicality time in the Myers-Brown household. It's practicality time. What am I going to do here? And so, Ben, I thought and I thought and I thought and I came up with what might genuinely be the single most romantic gift I've ever given in my life.
Suspense.
I went and got us a 75-inch TV for the living room. The old TV we had, listen, we were watching the playoff games. All right. We were watching the playoff games a couple days before Christmas, and she and I were watching together, and halfway through the game, she's like, "Is it just me or is like the sound bad?" And I was like blaming ESPN. I'm like, "Oh, what a bad broadcast. She spent all this time pushing a 12-team playoff." And then I went in the back where the big TV is back in the bro cave. I went in the back and when I turned on the TV in the back, to check in while I was making a couple of, social media posts for the show and whatnot. When I went into the back and I turned it on, I'm like, "Oh no, actually this sounds really good. The TV out front is just 100 years old and sucks now." Yes. I was like, That's it. I know what I'm doing. So Christmas morning, she woke up to a gigantic box of a brand new 75-inch TV that is going up right in the main living room, right there is the center of attention. And here's the thing. I knew, I'm like, okay, listen. This is going to go one of two ways. She's either going to be like, yay, new TV. Or she's going to be like, you irresponsible jackass.
Right.
And she walked out that morning, and I didn't wrap it because it's a big ass box. I just put a bow on the top, and she went,
of course.
New TV. Yay.
Hey.
Bang! Got a good one. Bonus. Got the unicorn. Should have been real, real mad at me for spending that much money on a television. Instead, she went, do you know how much better Olivia Benson's going to look when I watch SVU for hours a night on a 75-inch TV? And the answer is, Olivia Benson's kind of a looker.
It's always kind of a looker. Olivia.
Yeah. Yeah. Big HD guy over here. So the Browns-Myers Christmas celebrated by just buying a big-ass TV. Pretty spectacular. Hey, we got to get to the water cooler cheat sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports. This AM, Ben, I forgot to tell you that we have the water cooler cheat sheet. If you don't mind finding the intro to that, I will continue to stall until you tell me it's ready and we play this. I don't know which one of you absolute lunatics that I work with. I just rolled up into, yeah, it's like 45 degrees outside, but which one of you absolute freaking psychopaths had the heater on in the studio?
Jesus.
I am dying. That's my fault. I wore flannel, but let's be honest. This flannel looks incredible. The heater should not be. Okay. Water cooler cheat sheet, top three sports stories out here. You need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports. This lovely, lovely Monday morning. Let's get into it. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now, it is an NFL heavy water cooler cheat sheet. We start yesterday. It was a reality check of a game for the Carolina Panthers. 48-14 is your final. The Buccaneers down their NFC South comrades, the Carolina Panthers. Baker Mayfield, 359 yards and five. Count them. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco touchdowns through the air. Tampa Bay also amassed 202 total rushing yards on the day. A buck 13 of that came from Buck E. Irving. Bryce Young, not a bad day. Now, you're going to listen to this number, and you're going to go, wait a minute, Rob, that sounds pretty average to me. And you wouldn't be wrong. You wouldn't be wrong, but hang on. 15 of 28, 203 yards, two touchdowns, including an absolute dot to Adam Thielen. My man was balling yesterday. You go, wait a minute, Rob Brown, 15 of 28 for 203 and two touchdowns. It's a good day, but it ain't a great day. Why, oh me, oh my, are you sending up the smoke like this was a masterclass performance from Bryce Young? I'll tell you why, ladies and gentlemen, because Bryce Young was pressured on 68.3% of his dropbacks. That's almost 69% of the time that Bryce. That means for every three times that Bryce Young dropped the throw a pass, two of those times he had a dude in his face. It was the highest single game pressure rate that any quarterback has faced in any game this season. Over two out of every three times Bryce Young dropped back to pass, Bryce Young had a Buccaneer up in his grill. And yet he still went for 203, two tutties, and no picks in the game. I'll tell you what the problem was. Chuba Hubbard got shut down, put on the season-ending IR hours before the game, and because of that, they had to go with Raheem Blackshear, 8 carries, 20 yards, and Mike Boone, 2 carries for 11 yards. The Panthers racked up a whopping 39 rushing yards compared to Tampa's 202, and 202 rushing yards on top of 359 through the air is, and I've done the scientific research on this, a lot of yards, like a lot of yards. But again, players won't tank, coaches won't tank. General managers and franchises will. And I believe that that was a game where the Panther administration said, we've seen enough. We know what we got. We know what we're working with. Let's turn the page. Like Bob Seger and then Metallica later said, here I am. Turn the page. Yeah. That's Hetfield. It's a solid Hetfield if we're keeping it a buck. It's like a B plus Hetfield. Anyway, we turn the page to item number two of the water cooler cheat sheet. Item number two of the water cooler cheat sheet. Yesterday, the Atlanta Falcons had the opportunity with a dub to catch up with the Buccaneers and create a world where they could have been NFC South champions. Now, they still live in a world where they could be NFC South champions, but the road no longer leads through Atlanta, Georgia, by way of a 30-24 overtime loss last night to the Washington Commanders. The Atlanta Falcons now have to not just win next weekend, which they do as the Falcons in the final week of the regular season take on the Carolina Panthers. But on top of that, the Falcons also have to await the result of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Buccaneers, sitting right now at 9-7, are first in the NFC South, and they wrap up at home against the New Orleans Saints, who are bad at football. They lost to the Raiders yesterday. Not great, Bob. Not great. Real not great, Bob. Anyway, Atlanta to win this division now must win against Carolina and must have the New Orleans Saints knock off the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. A Tampa win wins them the division. An Atlanta loss wins Tampa the division. A Tampa loss and Atlanta win is the only combination of results that could see the Atlanta Falcons steal the division back from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Otherwise, Tampa will claim their fourth consecutive NFC South division title. Michael Penix Jr., 19 of 35, 223 yards, a tutty, and a pick. But it was Jaden Daniels, a stud, 227 yards on the ground, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. And if that wasn't enough for you, he also ran 16 times for, and this is not a typo, 127 rushing yards. Just like Robbie B told you, the dude is a dude. He's going to be your NFL Rookie of the Year. I tried to let you know. Finally, item number three. Ordinarily, a Philadelphia running back isn't a guy that would get his own item on the water cooler cheat sheet, but Saquon Barkley is not ordinary, and this is not an ordinary story. Saquon Barkley, going into the final game of the regular season, needs 101 yards to eclipse Eric Dickerson's single season rushing record. Yesterday, Saquon put up a 167 in a 41-7 win over the Dallas Cowboys, and that brought him to within a century plus one that he needs to get by. Now, here's the interesting question. Do you risk it for the biscuit here? Do you risk Saquon Barkley when the Eagles are currently sitting in the NFC at 13-3, one game off the lead of the Minnesota Vikings for the number one seed? When they are currently, depending on the outcome tonight, either going to be tied with or a game back of the Detroit Lions for the best record in the NFC. The Eagles are absolutely alive for the opportunity to end up in the driver's seat of the NFC when it is all said and done. But do you risk Saquon? If you get a game in hand, if the Eagles find themselves in their final regular season matchup against the lowly and pathetic New York Giants, who beat the Colts yesterday because LOL, Indy, I guess. Do you risk Saquon Barkley, or do you shut him down and understand that while you are alive for the one seed, it ain't great odds, and just roll for the two seed and not worry about it? I don't know. What I do know is Saquon Barkley not only has a chance to make history. Sorry, Chris Lewis, friend of the show, president of the Greenville Triumph and noted New York Giant fan. I know you're not going to love this. Saquon Barkley has a chance to get 102 yards, become the all-time single-season rushing yards leader, and do it against the team that botched and mangled and mismanaged his exit from the NYC. We will find out what they decide to do. All right, let's run to a break. Coming up in the show, in the next segment, we'll talk some more collegiate football. At 8:40 a.m., John Blau of the Post and Courier will join the show. We will talk a little Clemson football. What went wrong in the roadie against the Texas Longhorns? Did they just run into a better team, or are there some decisions that perhaps Dabo and the gang want back? We'll get into that at 8:40. Then at 9:40, to wrap up the show, we are going to be joined by All Elite Wrestling's Dax Harwood. Dax is a Carolinas fella, cut his teeth on the professional wrestling circuit around the Carolinas. He has been heavily invested in Hurricane Helene relief. Around the Carolinas, AEW has a New Year's Day show up in Asheville. One of the best tag team wrestlers on planet Earth, member of FTR, Dax Harwood, will join us at 9:40. All that coming up on the Rob Brown Show. All that coming up on the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Rob, Ben, filling in for the great one, Lonzo. And yo, be a part of the radio show. 844-326-3663, 844-F-A-N-F-O-N-E. You can text us at 71-307, 71-307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N, FAN, F-A-N. We'll read them on the air. Looking for you guys on the text line. The text line has been disturbingly quiet this morning. And listen, this is a weird week because most of us don't want to do anything at all, right? Like it's still the holiday season. You don't want to do anything. I get it. All right. But here's the thing. The sports calendar never sleeps. Sports never stops. The grind never stops, ladies and gentlemen. So I know you're up. I know you're listening. I know the Armada is active this AM, and we want you to be a part of the show. 71-307 is the text line. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N. The phone line is open. The Renewal by Anderson of the Carolinas fan phone is 844-F-A-N-F-O-N-E. That is 844-326-3663. You can tweet me at The Rob Brown Show. You can tweet everybody in the station at The Fan Upstate. And, of course, watch the stream. We are streaming the show live as we do every morning at Facebook.com/TheFanUpstate, The Fan Upstate on YouTube, or The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitch, because I am a millennial. We use Twitch. It's what we do. It's spectacular. Go to Twitch and search The Fan, or excuse me, The Rob Brown Show. Like and subscribe there, and let's roll. We have been talking quite extensively this morning about the college football playoffs post round numero uno. And here is the stance that I have taken thus far. There were four butt whoopings in round number one. To say I was unsurprised would be a lie. I was quite surprised to, as the kids say, keep it a buck with you. I was quite surprised by that. What I am not surprised by is the reaction from fans. The reaction of, hey, look, we told you they got it wrong. And wrapped up in the middle of that whole conversation was Kirk Herbstreit. After the first round, Kirk had this to say.
That I hope next year the committee won't get caught up in what the social media and a lot of people who are fringe fans get caught up in, which is wins. They had 11 wins. They must be good. Who did they beat? I think is much more important than how many wins you have. That's old school way of approaching it. Has not, you know, Indiana having 11 wins and beating nobody, that doesn't mean they're one of the 12 best teams. Remember, I know, Linda, I'm not taking this out on you, but there's a big difference between deserving and best.
Yeah.
What this is all about is giving us the best 12 teams. Now, subjective, how you want to figure out the best 12 is up to you. But that's what I want to see. I don't want to hear about wins. How many wins? Winning's obviously important, but just because you have 11 wins doesn't mean you're better than a team that maybe had a tougher road that had 9 wins. So I think we get too caught up in how many wins you have. It's really more about who are the best 12 teams, and we need to get the best 12 teams in this tournament every year.
So the conversation has been around, in my opinion, and this is, I've been saying this to you. The conversation is just around the process. And the process, by definition, in the way that college football is structured in the year 2024, the process is inherently subjective. It just is. And there is a way to make it objective. This is why I have, for a hot minute, gone out of my way to say, there is no use in bringing into focus the NFL's playoff structure. I have seen a number of people say, oh, the NFL. The NFL is not worth mentioning in this conversation. And it's not because, I have a gripe with the NFL. I do. We'll come to that later in the show, but that's not the point. The gripe is not, or the focus should not be on the NFL, because the NFL has something that college football doesn't, an objective way to structure their playoffs. We know what it is. The top four winners of the division in both conferences go, and then the top three teams that did not win a division get in as wild card teams. The last of the four division winners will host a game. The three division winners, the first place in the first division winner gets a bye. The next three division winners will host the three wild card teams. These are objective metrics to determine who gets in and who does not. College football does not, and in its current structure, cannot have an objective way to structure the playoffs. By definition, without changing the storyline, it cannot have an objective metric. Now, I will tell you that there are some folks who want to move in that direction. Here's CBS Sports Chip's Patterson.
I'd like to get rid of conference championship games.
So you would just rank top 14, top 12,
yeah,
and just have them in?
Mm-hmm. The thoughts behind this were, number one, we eliminate conference championship games, which, by the way, are a very new thing. And we let conferences have their own way to decide to declare their champion, just like it's done for more than 100 years of college football before the conference championship game era. Number two, just what Bud said, we back this thing up. New Year's Day should be college football's day. And the fact that we're going to have New Year's Day and then 19 more days until we crown a champion means that if this thing is just going to get like playoff fatigue, drowned out by the NFL playoffs, I think that we should have games of more significance right there around New Year's Eve and New Year's Day.
So there it is. The conference championship games. And he's not wrong, by the way. Here is just because I was curious. Conference championship games are a relatively new institution. The SEC's conference championship game started in 1992. I was already 7 years old. The Big 12 championship game started in 1996. I was 11. The MAC in 97. The ACC's first championship game was in 2005. I was out of high school. Let's see, Conference USA 05, Big Ten 2011, Mountain West 2013. The Sun Belt just started playing one in 2018. The point here that Chip, I think, was making is that conference championship games are a new addition to college football. But here's the thing, and I told you this when we were going up to round one, when we were going up to the college football playoff selection committee's final rankings that would determine the bracket. Those aren't going anywhere. Those aren't going anywhere because they are gigantic moneymakers for the conferences. And the gigantic moneymakers for the conference, that is their priority, man. That is their priority. Their priority is to get that bag. And again, I don't have any issues with that at all. No issues with that at all. I understand it. Just about everybody's priority in 2024 is to get that bag, because the bags are kind of hard to get in 2024. So you get it where you can. That's not going anywhere. And so unless every conference says, yeah, we'll get rid of our conference championship game, then you're not changing that. You're not changing that. So with that being said, we cannot do this in any other way than asking for subjective metrics. And so even though it sounds like I am beating a dead horse, and it sounds that way because I am, even though it sounds like I'm beating a dead horse because I have been saying for a very, very, very long time now, put a microphone and a camera in that room. Put a microphone and that camera in that room so that players and coaches and athletic directors and fans can know exactly what the committee wants. What do they want to see? Or your other option, if you don't want to put a mic and a camera in that room, which it wouldn't shock me that they wouldn't want to put a mic and a camera in the room. And they wouldn't want to put a mic and a camera in the room because then they would have to actually be a lot more candid with the way that they're putting stuff together. If you're not going to put a mic and a camera in the room, then do the next best thing. The next best thing is 100% going to be expand the committee by a lot. Expand the committee by a lot. Expand the committee to hundreds of fans. Wait a minute, Rob. If you end up with hundreds of fans, aren't you going to have a bunch of people in there who maybe have a bias or but yes. But you know what else you're going to do? You're going to even them out. You're going to even them out. You are going to even out the biases, because if I end up with let's say 1,000 voters, I end up with 200 of them that are SEC stands. Well, if I construct this the right way, I should also end up with 200 that are Midwest fans and 200 that are Northeastern fans and 200 that are Left Coast fans. And if I spread these votes out correctly, then what I end up with, hopefully, is a room full of people. And this wouldn't be an actual room. This would be a metaphorical room. But a metaphorical room full of people who all kind of balance each other out and give us their thoughts on who the best teams are. The conversation comes down, and you heard Herb Street say it a second there. However you want to determine the best 12 is subjective. Well, then it's irrelevant. And this is why I've been kind of hammering this drum this morning too. Hearing people say, oh, 12 best teams, 12 most deserving teams. It's kind of irrelevant. Because if you accept that, you can allow people to use whatever metric it is that they want to use to determine whether those 12 teams are best or most deserving, then labeling it is only trying it. All you do when you label it is allow me to pretty much be able to successfully guess how you think the format was structured. If you're banging the drum about, oh, it should be the 12 best teams, you're telling me you think Alabama, South Carolina, Ole Miss, or some combination of those should have been in. If you say 12 most deserving, you're telling me it should have been the way it was structured, the way it was set up. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. And until we have a way to do it objectively, which under the current settings we can, then we have to continue to use it subjectively. And if we are going off of subjectivity, then results on the field matter in the regular season, and the results on the field of the postseason should not impact whether or not we change the system moving forward. There is no way to know that Alabama wouldn't have got their asses kicked by Notre Dame. There's no way to know that South Carolina wouldn't have got smoked by Ohio State, just like there was no way to know if Indiana would or SMU would or Clemson would or Tennessee would, right? There's no way to know. We have to look at what we see, take results into consideration, and then put the boys on the field and let them play, and let's see what happens. If all those four teams would have won their games this weekend, Would you still be making that argument today? No. So it is what it is. It is what it is. All right, we're going to talk more about this later on in the show. We got to get some NFL in here and more. Let's talk Clemson and Texas when we come back here in just a minute on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. .38-24, Texas downs the Clemson Tigers despite 336 passing yards from Cade Klubnik. He had three touchdowns and a pick. Look, it was real simple. Couldn't run the ball, 76 rushing yards. Couldn't stop them from running the ball. 292 rushing yards and four ground tutties for the Texas Longhorns. This is one of those games that I do not think you need a doctorate in knowing ball to see exactly what happened here. The defense wasn't good enough. And specifically, the rushing defense wasn't good enough. It just kind of was what it was there. This Clemson defense, and I'll tell you right now, I think ultimately what you're going to end up seeing is likely that Wes Goodwin is gone as defensive coordinator. In fact, I've already seen a couple of different places, including the Clemson Insider, and we will check with John Blau in about an hour from now about whether this is true or not. But there are reports out there that Dabo Swinney is going to make a change at his defensive coordinator position. There is some conversation about whether or not Wes Goodwin could be landing elsewhere. There were conversations that he could be on his way to go reunite with Brent Venables out at Oklahoma, because there are thoughts that their co-defensive coordinators could be on their way out and those two have worked together in the past or what. We will find out. But there is conversation that Wes Goodwin could be on his way out, and conversations that cornerback coach Mike Reed, who has been with Dabo Swinney since 2013 and is currently his assistant head coach, could be a serious candidate for an interior hire. However, there are also rumors out there that Swinney will likely go after a more experienced defensive coordinator and hire from the outside in, much like he did last year when he brought Matt Luke in to be the offensive line coach. And I think I'll say a couple of things. Number one, with respect to Wes Goodwin, who has been, again, very kind to me and the show in the years that he has been in that role, defensively, this Clemson team, to me, this year, just played soft. And I don't mean soft in terms of physicality, in terms of mentality. I mean soft in terms of the actual defense. I mean, like, this team tended to lean on a soft zone defense, and I think that got you into a lot of trouble. This team tended to want to play back into a zone instead of on the forefront. And what that led to was Clemson getting the ball rammed down their throat more than they did not. It kind of is what it is. I think there's a couple of things here. Number one, there is the matter of accountability. And I think that's a big play here. I think that this is, I'm not going to say this is a spot where after this season somebody had to go. I mean, the reality is Clemson climbed back to the top of the Atlantic Coast Conference. They won the conference championship. They got an invite into the inaugural 12-team playoff. The team's not where I think Clemson fans want it to be, not where they expect it to be. Frankly, I don't think it's where Dabo wants it or expects it to be right now. And so I do think there is some level of accountability here, because the belief would be the defense has got a large part to say that. I think that what I said about the defense playing soft, again, not in terms of physicality or mentality, I'm talking about the actual defense played a soft zone. It played on the back heel. It played backwards. It said, look, we're not going to give you a bunch of big plays. Doesn't really matter. Doesn't really matter now. I think that's what cost you against South Carolina. I think late in that game, a game in which early in the game, Clemson appeared to be getting after the South Carolina offense. I think the same thing is true about the Texas game. I think early you were getting after the Texas Longhorn offense. And at that spot in the game, it kind of felt like, all right, maybe this is a bit of a competition here. And then for whatever reason, in the second quarter of this game, Clemson just decided to back off. And so what was a 7-7 game at the end of the first quarter was a 28-10 game at halftime. And then Texas just basically went into run the ball and play keep away. At that point, you had the big catch, 22-yard touchdown from Klubnik to Antonio Williams with 8:14 left in the first quarter. Texas turned around, next possession, went down the field, 12 plays, 75 yards, took over 6 minutes to score. Quintrevion Wisner, 3-yard out. It was 7-7. Jaden Blue then went on a 5-play, 65 yards, 38 to the house to make it 14-7. Wisner got in again, 16-yard run, 6-play, 87-yard, 3-minute drive to make it 21-7. Before Nolan Hooser, 32-yard field goal after a 7-play, 40-yard drive stalled out just a minute after Clemson got the ball, 21-10. And then with 28 seconds left, Gunnar Helm would have a 19-yard pass reception from Quinn Ewers. Bert Auburn would hit the extra point, 28-10 at the half. And then, like I said, Texas just kind of played stay-out-front football the rest of the way. Why? Because Clemson was giving it to them. At a point in that game, in the second half, third quarter, that was the point in time where Clemson should have been the most aggressive that they have been all year. That was the point in time where they should have been absolutely playing, we are going to take the run away from you. We are going to make sure that if you beat us, you are going to have to beat us spectacularly. And I just felt like Clemson defensively was playing on the back foot. So what did Texas do? We're just gonna hang on to the ball. We're just gonna hang on to the ball. Texas created a world in the third quarter where they had an opening drive that went 14 plays, 71 yards, and 7 minutes. That's kind of what it was. It was just gut runs. We're not going to ask the quarterback to do anything fancy. Why? Because you're taking all the fancy away. You're playing back on your heels. You're playing set up deep in the field and prevent us from throwing the ball. But here's the thing. We're up 28-10. We don't need to throw the ball. You need to throw the ball. We need to just run, and make sure that when you get it, the clock is as low as we can make it. And Texas did that because Clemson was playing back. We've talked about the offensive side of the ball so many times, and I've said for a very long time that I'm afraid that Dabo Swinney at certain spots in the game got a little concerned and took the keys away from Garrett Riley. I was afraid that Dabo and high-pressure situations started getting apprehensive and said, I'm taking the wheel, and started calling, as he called it, when Garrett Riley got there, and he said, Garrett Riley's not here to run the Garrett Riley offense. Garrett Riley's here to run the Clemson offense. I feel like there were some spots where he started to say, I'm taking the wheel back, and I am going to call the Clemson offense here. And that is that. Those are the spots when Clemson started looking like they were kind of behind the eight ball. And I feel like, and again, this is a theory. This is a theory from me just based on watching and knowing ball. In the middle of the season, when Garrett Riley had the controls, Cade Klubnik was being discussed as a potential Heisman finalist for about a 5-6 week spin there. And then that went away. If there was a spot for Dabo Swinney to take over the controls, if there was a spot for Dabo Swinney to say, I'm back in charge now, it would have been on the defensive side of the football. And it would have been in those last two games on the defensive side of the football. It would have been in those last two games at the spot where defensively you found yourself in a hole. It would have been in those last two games where defensively you found yourself playing again behind the eight ball and watching as Texas just ran and ran and ran and ran and ran, and you weren't doing anything about it. That's the spot that Dabo Swinney should have stepped up and said, I got the keys. We are going to play aggressive. We're going to play, if you'll allow me to use a hockey term, on the forecheck. We are going to get in the backfield, and we are going to make them do spectacular things to beat us. And you didn't. You just sat back. You allowed them to run the ball for 4, 5, 6, 7 minutes at a time. And whenever you scored, they just, let's go get level and let's play keep away. And it worked. It kind of is what it is. All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We got 2 more hours left to play. It is the halftime break coming up still in the show. John Blau in about 40 minutes from right now. We will get his thoughts on this game and the exit from the college football playoffs for the Clemson Tigers, as well as how he sees everything setting up for the 2025 college football season for Los Tigres. At 9:40, we'll be joined by Dex Hardwood, AEW superstar, one of the best tag team wrestlers on planet Earth. We'll stop by. He'll be on the live stream with us at 9:40 if you want to come by for that. The renewal by Anderson of the Carolinas fan phone is open, 844-326-3663, 844-FAN-FONE. You can text us 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N, FAN, F-A-M. We'll read them on the air. We're back after this with a third hour of the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. With an empty net goal and a 5-2 win over Toronto, Capitals forward Alex Ovechkin is now within 25 goals of Wayne Gretzky's all-time NHL mark of 894. Ovechkin played his first game since suffering a broken fibula on November 18th. The goal was his 16th in 19 games so far this season. The Caps have 46 games left to play for Avi to find 25 and set the record. Eagles running back Saquon Barkley became just the 9th player in NFL history to rush for 2,000 yards in a season after crossing the mark during a 167-yard day and a 41-7 win over the Dallas Cowboys. Barkley needs just 101 yards to break Eric Dickerson's single-season rushing record with a final game against the New York Giants in Week 18. The Carolina Panthers deactivated a handful of players for the week and a few more for the season, including running back Chuba Hubbard, hours before a 48-14 loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Bryce Young threw for 2 or 3 and a pair of touchdowns, but the Panthers rushed for only 39 rushing yards in the loss.